Now, I'm delighted to say we are joined by Victoria Kenefick. Now, Victoria is a Cork woman based in Tralee. She's made her carrier home now for many years. And she wrote a very poignant and thought-provoking and, I thought, ultimately a very hopeful piece in the Irish Times on Saturday about an experience that she had during lockdown that changed, I suppose, the dynamic of her family and her relationships forever. I'd like to welcome you on, Victoria, and thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Trasa. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. First of all, congratulations on your new collection of books, your new collection of poetry called Eggshell. We'll talk about it a bit more about the collection shortly. But for people who don't know you, I suppose we should say that you won an award for a previous collection of poetry called Eat or We Both Starve. That won the Seamus Heaney Centre for First Collection Poetry Prize. It was also shortlisted for the T.S. Eliot Prize and Costa Book Award for Poetry. Very, very, very prestigious competitions that these are. And we also had you on the Kerry Today show last year, Victoria, when one of your poems was came up in the Leaving Cert, the highest honour I think that anyone could have as an Irish poet.
Oh, absolutely. I just worry that there is a delay in the line, so I apologies if there's any awkwardness. Basically, I think being on the Leaving Cert was the equivalent, I think, for Irish people of winning the Nobel Prize. That's certainly what it felt like. I was walking down the street and people were stopping me. And I think among a very particular cohort of, you know, this year is maybe 19-year-olds, last year is 17 to 18-year-olds. I feel like I will always be, you know, somehow part of their lives, which is an enormous privilege. And I got such lovely messages from them. And it really was exciting to see them engage with poetry, maybe not necessarily initially by their own choice, but certainly they were really curious about the poem and curious about their processing of the poem. And it was really, really a beautiful moment, actually, in my writing journey. And as a teacher, too, having taught the Unseen Poem many times, actually being on it was a very uncanny experience, for sure.
And may I ask, Victoria, do you think because you have this young audience, I mean, you have a wider audience, but you have this particularly young audience, do you think that was one of the reasons why you've decided to write, as I said, this very beautifully written piece in the Irish Times at the weekend about the situation? I think a lot of us had, lockdown was a very strange time for many of us, and many of us had to confront, I suppose, who we were and where we were going to in life. But you wrote about, in the Irish Times at the weekend, about how your former spouse, the person you considered to be your husband, how she came out as a trans woman during lockdown. Do you think in part because you have that younger audience, did that motivate you to write about it?
It's amazing that you asked me that, because just before I came on, I was thinking of that exact thing, because I suppose as a secondary school teacher, which I was for many years, I was very aware, especially in the last couple of years, of a significant change in how, I suppose, students were beginning to embrace their true selves and their identities. And perhaps I would like to think that in our present culture and society, there is a little bit more space and a little bit more room and a little bit more acceptance and understanding of the myriad of ways to be a person. I think we have this kind of industrial model, and this, you know, we're moving away certainly from the industrialized kind of view of schools, or, you know, places where the children go in and are molded into a particular shape and they come out to work in particular environments. That's not how the world works anymore, and I'd argue that it never really was how the world should have worked. But there is this space that allows people to fully embrace the complexity of what it is to be a human person. And watching that has been very extraordinary as an adult and as an educator and as an artist, because there's nothing more brave, there's nothing more radical, there's nothing more hopeful and more beautiful than watching somebody step into who they really are, as difficult and challenging. And sometimes I think, you know, being a teenager is cripplingly embarrassing for many reasons, because you're just coming into yourself and you're trying on different identities and you're trying on different looks and you're trying to figure out who you are. And to watch, you know, these wonderful young people fully and bravely embrace who they are, it's really inspirational, actually. And it inspires, I think, the other students in the school and indeed the teachers too, and I would argue their parents and everyone around them. And I suppose I did feel it, not that I have any influence at all, but I did feel, I suppose, given that my co-parent, which is how I refer to her as now, we co-parent very, very happily and with much love together, our beautiful child. But I guess she didn't have that opportunity when she was growing up. There were no trans people in the media. There were no trans people around her, or she didn't even know what a trans person was, but had this feeling of difference that she couldn't articulate or understand, that caused her, and I'm sure she wouldn't mind me saying, a lot of difficulties and a lot of emotional distress and a lot of mental health issues that wouldn't have existed necessarily had she been able to recognize the truth of who she was from a younger age. And even so, our experience, which I wouldn't change for the world, but you know, it's a big thing to marry somebody and have a child with somebody and to, you know, have a life with somebody, and then to have this discovery, like, I would argue that it would have prevented, or it does prevent, if you can fully explore your identity as a younger person, future pain for other people too and yourself. So I think it's something that I really took very seriously when I was writing that article. Yes.
Can you talk us through when you're when the person you married, the person you consider to be your husband, disclosed to you that they were that she was a trans woman?
Yeah, I'm very conscious, obviously, of being very sensitive to the other people involved in this, because it's me telling my story, I suppose. So I'm going to very much focus on my experience of it, because obviously I can't speak about hers. But basically, like, the kind of limited highlights, I suppose, are ultimately over lockdown, this person I was married to, who we always had a wonderful relationship and were close and loving and so on, but was very distant and removed, and was depressed and had these episodes on and off, as people do, as we all do. But this was different. And I guess because COVID was happening, and I was in turmoil and the whole world was in turmoil and everybody was up in a heap, that was a really a convenient way for me to explain that to myself. And when I asked her, she kind of said similarly, until one evening I really looked at her, really, really looked at her, and very softly, and it wasn't confrontational, and it wasn't, I was like, are you okay? And then she just said it. And you know, it's a really strange moment, because I think maybe people think that these moments can be very dramatic or very exceptional, but it was a really quiet moment, and it was a really soft moment. And I think it was one where we both felt at that time, obviously, just for a minute, enormous relief. She felt enormous relief finally coming out, and I felt enormous relief finally knowing that I wasn't imagining something, and I wasn't I wasn't picking up on anything incorrectly, that there was something wrong, and now I finally knew what it was. So it was a very gentle moment and a very loving one. And I think it was the processing afterwards and the kind of trying to figure out how we were going to adapt to allow this wonderful person be herself. I mean, that's what love is supposed to, I suppose, allow us to be. It's like total acceptance, and acceptance of ourselves, and self-love is acceptance of ourselves. Not saying that we don't work on ourselves or we don't like have blind spots, but this sense of really embracing the full complexity and depth and contradictions of who we are. So it was at the time, it is a moment that I think, when I think back on it, is one that I appreciate and that I have quite soft feelings for.
Did you mourn, though, the loss of the person who was, as you saw them, your husband? Did you mourn the loss of your husband, though?
I think that's such a complicated question, and it's so difficult to answer, because cognitively, like intellectually, it's a really difficult change to process. because you don't realize, I certainly did not realize how gender plays such an incredibly important part in how I interpret people, myself, my relationships. And, you know, obviously this person didn't change. In fact, she's more of who she's always been, and I still love her, and we still have a loving family, even though our marriage is over and our romantic relationship is over. We're still very much a family. But I suppose what I had to make peace with ultimately was the fact that my version of this person was not the version that this person wanted to be. And that was the version that I had married, and that was the version that I had fallen in love with, and that was the version that I knew. And so it was very upending and very confusing. I will say confusing is probably the biggest element of it. It was very confusing just grappling with that, because I didn't know how I was going to react. And I'd never, like, as somebody who is heterosexual and cis, I never had really had to question my own sexuality before. And it was then I really began to truly, I think, as much as a cis heterosexual person can, understand any other identity, because it was confusing, it was disorientating, it was upending, it was upsetting, it was wild, actually. And it made me realize that, you know, sexuality and identity is not a choice. And it does matter, because it mattered to me that this person that I was married to was going to be male, or I had married a male person. That was important to me. And I couldn't change that even if I wanted to, just as much as my spouse then couldn't change her needs in that regard either. So I think I certainly mourned the loss of the future that I had imagined for ourselves. I mourned the loss of the unit and the safety and invisibility of being in a heterosexual couple and a heterosexual relationship, because nobody bats an eyelid or looks at you, or, you know, you don't have to justify yourself or come out, because it is the norm. So now I'm in a very different situation where, you know, I'm looking at school books that my daughter has, and they're all, you know, mommy and daddy, and that's not her experience. So I'm suddenly experiencing things from a very different perspective, and, you know, it's actually an enormous gift, and it has expanded my awareness and my empathy so much, and my daughter's indeed, and it's not been an easy journey for all of us, but it's been ultimately a really beautiful and positive one, as I think the vast majority of changes can be if you allow them.
And you wrote in the Irish Times at the weekend that it's all about, in part, about relearning this person as the woman she is.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually extraordinary. It's an extraordinary privilege to bear witness to this transition, because really, and I hope she doesn't mind me saying, or indeed I hope other trans people listening, and my solidarity and love to them all, don't mind me saying, like, because it appears from the outside, at least, and from what she has told me, like, you do go through a kind of adolescence in your real sex, I suppose. And it's extraordinary to watch this person mature and grow and become the person that they've always been. And there are awkward times, and they were very emotional times and very, very funny times. And I'm incredibly proud of her journey, and she's an incredibly brave and wonderful woman. And I think really a lot of people who have trans people in their family, or know trans people, or who are worried about the whole concept of trans, I think often it's really about worries about what it means for them. And really, it's only about engaging with your own insecurities and your own areas of yourself that you mightn't have explored yet, and your own fears around the unknown. And really, it's just beautiful people just trying to live their best lives and be themselves. And, like, it's very ordinary at the end of the day. They just want to go to work and go out for dinner and, you know, go to the beach for a walk. And it's a really, I feel very privileged to have been part of it, actually.
Victoria, I know you have an appointment to go to shortly, but could you stay with us a few more minutes? We just need to take an ad break, and there's just a couple of more questions I'd like to ask you, if that's okay. Thank you for this. We're speaking to Victoria Kenefick, award-winning poet from Cork, but who's based here in Tralee, and she's currently writer in residence with Cork County Council. Victoria's new poetry collection, Eggshell, much of it is informed by the experience of when her former spouse, the person she considered to be her husband, came out as a trans woman during lockdown. And if you've any views on this, and indeed we'll be asking Victoria when we come back in a couple of minutes, what would she have to say for anyone listening in who's going through similar experience? And we're speaking to poet Victoria Kenefick. Victoria, your latest poetry collection, Eggshell, is there anything you could read to us or reference to us that you think would kind of resonates or is kind of informed by that experience you've gone through when the person, your former spouse, the person you considered to be your husband, came out as a trans woman?
Yeah, so the book is divided into two sections, and the second section, Shell, so there's a slash, I suppose, between egg and shell. And basically, when I was writing it initially, it was about very different subject of secondary infertility and young motherhood and all of that wonderful, exciting experience. So when I found out about my former spouse's experience and her identity, I did a lot of research, and that's something I often do when I am met with something I am trying to understand or that I am confused by, or if I have a very emotional response to something, I go straight to my brain. So I did a lot of research, and I came across the fact that in trans slang, somebody who has yet to realise that they are trans is called an egg in the trans community. So somebody who's unaware that they're trans. And then once that person has the beautiful epiphany that they are trans, it's called your egg cracking. And I just couldn't believe that metaphor existed, because it's so beautiful, and it really helped me to understand the trans experience in so many ways. Because, you know, eggs are such a potent symbol for so much, but equally, usually cracking them is a positive thing because you get to make something new, but the shell gets broken all the same. So there is this sense of things get broken, things get shattered, things get messy, but something beautiful is made out of them. So that was kind of interesting, given that I had been writing about eggs and shells already. In terms of reading out a poem, I will read, I'm trying to find a short one because I'm aware that people enjoy short ones best. And I guess what I found most challenging about learning this new person, or this version, this real version of this person, was the name, actually. And I started training before my co-parent came out to everyone. I started training because I felt like I really needed to know her name, and that name needed to be the first name that came to me in this space. So I changed her name on my phone like months and months and months before she came out, once she had decided on a name. And every time she rang, I was like, "Who's that? Who's that? I don't know that a person by that name," for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And it really blew my mind, actually, because it was a real example of learning at work, and neuroplasticity at work, which is about your brain being able to adapt and change and relearn and remake new neural pathways, basically. So that was something that I found really, really fascinating in that process, and how it is possible. So it's a very, very short poem called Lessons in Neuroplasticity When Changing Your Name to Your Name. The telephone is torture. When I call you, I hear you still as you were on your voicemail, and my brain persists in thinking nothing has changed. I update to your new name in my contacts. It is a shock every time you call. Who is she? So just very short and sweet.
Wonderful. Wonderful, Victoria. And I think it's great that you can talk about the fact that you know, it's not some sort of smooth transition from that there are, as you said, neuroplasticity, and it's just kind of, in a basic sense, getting your head around when a person you love very much has embraced their true identity. I suppose it's also about how much, no matter how well we know someone we love, that there's always a mystery. There's always, we'll never totally know what's going on inside anyone's mind, never mind a loved one's.
Absolutely. And I actually would go as far as to say we often don't even know what is going on in our own minds and hearts equally. And that was something that I was really confronted with when this all happened, because I began to realize, and I touch a little bit on the article in the Irish Times as well, about, you know, different things that I was aware of in my own experience that I was having trouble with. And it turned out I basically inspired by my co-parent and her bravery and her kind of explorational attitude of like, I'm just going to do this. When we eventually arrived at that place, I pursued an ADHD diagnosis, and I had suspected that I had ADHD for quite a while and had danced around it, and I kind of researched it and then gone, nah, and then kind of made an appointment and cancelled it and so on. And eventually it turns out that I do have ADHD, and the knowing of which has massively and hugely transformed my life and my relationship with myself, and is something that was in me all this time that I've struggled with, that I've hid, that I've kept secret, that I've been ashamed of. And not to equate the two in any way whatsoever, but I guess it's just to refer to your point that, you know, we are mysteries to ourselves as well, and that's kind of beautiful and something I think a really beautiful part of growing older, because I think we concentrate so much on the negatives of growing older and the negatives of maturing, and really it's an enormous gift in terms of we have this time and opportunity to really look at ourselves and our relationship with others and look at what triggers us and look at what makes us unhappy and look at what makes us angry and say, well, what does that say about me and how can I make peace with myself in that regard?
And finally, and unfortunately briefly, Victoria, because we're tight for time, based on your own experience, you can only speak from your own experience, for anyone whose partner has revealed something to them in a similar way, in a similar that they feel that they're in the wrong gender, and that they should be that they are a trans person, or someone who indeed is themselves struggling with their own gender identity. What would you say to them, based on your own experience?
That's a really hard one, because obviously I've only been a witness to it. But I suppose for particularly people who are trans, or people who love people who are trans, that I think there are so many worries about what other people are going to think. And I think that was something we were both very concerned about. And I just want to say huge thank you to the people we know in Kerry for being so wonderfully understanding and accepting and loving. And ultimately, I think the major thing to think about is that ultimately, at the end of the day, it's your life and no one else cares. Because once everyone realized that my co-parent was this new beautiful identity, they, you know, she introduced herself to them again, and that was it. And everyone went on with their lives, and it's no big deal now. And everyone is too busy in their own experience and their own troubles and their own worries and their own joys to really pay it much heed. So it's really about, you know, using this one precious life to explore the full extent of who you are, get support, speak to people you love, and I suppose let love and acceptance be the overriding factor, and allow for sadness and allow for loss. There's always loss and sadness, no matter what choice you make. Whether you get married, you're saying goodbye to the single life. When you have a baby, it's wonderful, but equally you're saying goodbye to freedom. There's always losses and gains, and so it's really important just to be the truest version of yourself as you can be, and seek out help. There's help there. At Tenny is a wonderful organisation that supports trans people and their families that I recommend you look up online if you're in that situation.
Tenny, and we'll give the details shortly. Victoria, we'll leave it there. We've been speaking to Victoria Kenefic, Tralee-based poet from Cork, and her new poetry collection published this year, Eggshell, is out now.